Blog Talk Radio.
3, 2, 1. The True Adventures of Ann Lister, perhaps the leading disruptor of 19th century society, are now dramatized on Gentleman Jack, HBO's acclaimed new Monday night series. Creator, executive producer, co-writer, and director Sally Wainwright joins me next in an internet radio exclusive live from London. Proven Innocent wraps its rookie season on Fox next month. Tony-winning co-star Nikki James will come by later this hour. At the top of next hour, we'll introduce you to Aspergers Are Us, a sketch comedy quartet connected by Asperger's syndrome. Our guide, Alex Lehman, director of next week's HBO miniseries following this unique foursome on tour. Also ahead, Star Trek engages with Nickelodeon, HGTV's new overseer, and our classic trivia question. Hello, everyone. I'm Simon Applebaum, simulcasting live from New York on Blog Talk Radio and Spreaker, and presented on the iHeartRadio Podcast Network. This just in, tomorrow will be televised. Brought to you by Audible.com, proud development partner of the annual New York Television Festival and the leading provider of spoken audio entertainment information that will transform the way you hear the world. Listen to audiobooks whenever and wherever you want. Get a free book, three of them, when you sign up for a 30-day trial at audibletrial.com/televised. More details later in the program. Great to have you with us on this Wednesday afternoon. Third of three back-to-back-to-back programs we'll bring you of the program All About Television, and our third of fourth that we'll bring your way all week long. 66 degrees at the top of the hour. Beautiful day here in the Big Apple. We have some wonderful guests coming your way over the next 90 minutes, and we invite you to be part of the program. It's so simple. Pick up the phone, raise your voice, dial over this number, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. The number is good anywhere you're catching us across the country or around the globe here on Blog Talk Radio and Speaker. We have another way to get involved. It's our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. You'll find it at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. And while the program is on the air, you can hear others by using Facebook Timeline. Click on the Facebook icon, your Blog Talk or Speaker screen. Follow the instructions. Other people can be live with you. Sally Wainwright of Gentleman Jack joins us live from London after these news notes. Steady as she goes into the world of computer animation, Nickelodeon will serve up a new Star Trek tune series overseen by Star Trek Discovery executive producer Alex Kurtzman. Untitled at the moment, this trek will take place aboard a derelict Starfleet ship discovered and re-engaged for new journeys by a group of teenagers. Emmy-winning writers Kevin and Dan Hageman will supervise the series for Discovery producer CBS TV Studios. Rod Roddenberry, the son of Trek creator Gene Roddenberry, will be involved as an executive producer. Two more Trek animated series are in development for CBS All Access. Current Travel Channel General Manager Jane Latman is now Home and Garden TV's new president. She will succeed Allison Page, who will oversee the 2020 changeover of DIY Network to a new lifestyle channel co-run by fixer-upper couple Chip and Joanna Gaines. In other developments at Discovery, Inc., MythBusters co-star Adam Savage will return to TV this June in Savage Build. The 8-episode series will debut on Science Channel and then show up on Discovery Channel. Season 3 of Andy Mack, Disney Channel's groundbreaking dramedy, will end up being the last. Mack's production team, led by Terry Minsky, agreed to end their venture with its current season. A final group of episodes will begin on Disney Channel June 21st. The closing episode will play July 26th. Now some quickies. Cinemax has renewed the Bruce Lee-inspired drama Warrior for a second season next year. Creator Jonathan Todd was on this program several weeks ago. Mr. Iglesias, Netflix's schoolroom sitcom with Gabriel Iglesias, the popular comedian, begins June 21st. Pennyworth, the a.k.a. the drama series with Jack Bannon playing Batman's butler Alfred, younger age of course, will arrive on Epix July 28th. This just in, all five rookie series on the CW this season are going to continue this fall in 2020. We're talking about All-American, Charmed, Roswell, New Mexico Legacies, and In the Dark. And Ken Kutcheval, Cliff Barnes on the original CBS and TNT revival of Dallas, has passed away. A published report originating from Kutcheval's hometown, Clinton, Indiana, noted that the actor died Sunday night, but additional details were unavailable. And that is news notes for today. Our first guest took a few decades to get her program on the air this past Monday night on HBO. It's Gentleman Jack, and if you've never heard of Ann Lister, you are in for a very interesting treat, because this dramedy is the story of a very remarkable woman who really was the first big disruptor, maybe the greatest disruptor, in the world of 19th century England. Joining us live from London in the Internet Radio System, the creator, executive producer, co-writer, director of this remarkable series, in more ways than one, Sally Wainwright. Sally, thank you for making the time, and congratulations.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be talking to you.
Your series has been on now for 2 days on HBO, and it's been on the BBC as well. Contrast the reaction of people here to the reaction from people in your home country on the BBC.
It's not actually been on the BBC yet. It's going to be out in England in May. So we've only had it out in in the US so far.
So we'll get it first. What's the reaction you've been getting so far?
Sorry?
What's the reaction you've been getting so far from critics and from viewers?
It's been really positive. It's been overwhelmingly positive. People seem to really respond to her and to Saran's extraordinary performance. I think she's such a unique character, Alistair. I think people would just be amazed that she lived when she did and that she lived the life that she did, you know, that she was so bold and so, you know, that she had such a modern and healthy attitude towards her homosexuality. I think that's, you know, it's absolutely extraordinary, and I think people are really responding to that.
We already have someone in our chat room, Simon Apple 04 by name, so welcome aboard. If you have a question or comment for Sally, make the phone call, 646-652-2906, or put it in the chat room, and we will get to it. One of the things that makes your series remarkable is the length of time you took to get this on the air. When you were here in New York at a preview of the series, you said it took at least 2 decades to get this together. First of all, how did you find out about Ann Lister, and why did it take so long to have this become a series?
Well, I grew up in Halifax, where Shibden Hall is, which Anne owned in the she inherited it in 1826. So I grew up there, and I used to visit there as a child because it's a museum now. And in the 1970s, when I was a child, people just didn't talk about Anne Lister. You could spend the day at Shibden Hall and not know she'd ever existed. People just didn't talk about her. She was kind of a secret. And then in the 1990s, I did start to hear things about her, about this transgressive woman who kept a diary, and there was something rather secretive about her. So I tried to find out as much as I could, which was difficult then. You know, this is pre the internet. And eventually I read a book called Female Fortune that was published by Jill Lidington in 1998. And that's when I got my first sort of really big hit of exactly who she was. And I was just amazed that this woman had owned this house that I was so familiar with, that I'd been so familiar with, you know, since being a child. So I instantly knew that I wanted to dramatise it. And I pitched it to a few broadcasters sort of in the early noughties, sort of 2002, 2003, and people just weren't interested. And I think the time just wasn't right, and I think the time now is right. You know, we live in a world where we can talk about women getting married to each other, and, you know, the discourse about gender and sexuality is very healthy. And so I think, you know, as with Anne Lister herself, her time has come, and this is it. And I think I'm just lucky that I'm the person who got to do this.
One of the interesting challenges, Sally, for you and your production team was that while Ann Lister kept a humongous diary of her adventures, of her exploits, that all of it was in code. So how did you, or how was the code cracked?
It's not all in code. About a sixth of it is in code. So the journal itself is about 5 million words long. It's 27 volumes. It's extraordinary. You can't underestimate how huge this is. Sorry, you can't overestimate how huge this is. It's a massive, massive document. I mean, I haven't read the whole thing myself. I've dipped in and out of it, and I've concentrated on particular bits of it that I am interested in. What was the other part of the question you asked me?
Well, how did the code get cracked, but also for you and your fellow writers and directors, given that this woman led an incredible, very full, very expansive life, how did you determine what you were going to cover in this series, what events in her life you were going to dramatize?
Well, I chose to look at her at the age of 40 when she came back to Shibden in 1832. By that point in her life, she was multitasking. She'd inherited Shibden. She wanted to find a wife. She decided to sink coal mines. She had a lot of industrial rivals in Halifax who she wanted to take on. So she was a very complex woman by that point in her life. And I think when you pick someone up when they're slightly more mature at the age of 40, you can always tell retrospective stories about the earlier part of their life. Whereas if you start telling the story early on in their life, they're just that less well-developed as a character. The story of the diaries is interesting. After Anne Lister died, the diaries were kind of hidden behind panelled walls at Shibden Hall in a secret cupboard. And they were subsequently discovered by one of her, not descendants, but a guy called John Lister, who was a cousin who'd inherited the house after Anne had died. And his son, who was also called John Lister, found the diaries and was fascinated by them, because in the non-coded parts, there were really fascinating descriptions of life in Halifax in the 1830s. And he was fascinated by the code, and he got a fellow historian. He was very interested in history himself, and he got a fellow historian to look at the code, and they deciphered it together. They looked at it, they found a scrap of paper in which he'd mixed her ordinary handwriting with code, which was very, very rare. She didn't usually do that. I've never seen an example of it, but they found this one piece where she'd written, "In God is my hope," and the word "hope" was in code. And from that one word, they were able to break the code. And this was in 1895, so the first time it was cracked was in 1895. And when they realised what they were reading, he put the journals back behind the walls, out of sight. His friend advised him to burn them, but he wouldn't, because he knew they were an important historical document. But homosexuality was illegal in England, of course, at that time, but not for women, but it would still have been regarded on a criminal level, so that the journals were hidden away again. They were found again in the 1930s when John died, and he left Shibden Hall to the people of Halifax, and the council and the local chief librarian went in, and they were discovered again, and once again they were hidden away when it was clear what the content of the journals was, because John had left the code that him and his friend had worked on, the key to the code, sorry. And then they were finally published in 1988 by a lady called Helena Whitbread, who's written books, several books about Anne. So the story of the journals in itself is, you could make a film about that.
Gentleman Jack is HBO's new miniseries based on the incredible life of Anne, and I do mean an incredible life, of Anne Lister, as played by an extraordinary actress. We're going to talk about her in a second, by the name of Saran Jones. And the show is on HBO Monday nights at 10 p.m. Pacific time. Sally Rainwright is the creator, the executive producer, one of the writers and directors of the series. She's with us live from London this half hour. On Tomorrow will be televised. Time and half hour with you live from the other side of the Atlantic, New York, 66 degrees at the top of the hour. Absolutely gorgeous day here in the Big Apple. And we invite you to be part of the program. All it takes is a phone call from you, 646-652-2906. Or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. We have one more episode coming your way this week. It's Friday at our regular time, 3 p.m. Eastern Pacific. And then next week, we have an episode on Monday at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific. And then our next Friday episode is from 4 to 5 p.m. Eastern time. That's 1 to 2 p.m. Pacific time. Coming up on next Monday's show, among our guests, Andy Friendly. Yes, he's the son of the famous journalist who worked with Edward R. Murrow back in the 1950s, Fred Friendly, on See It Now and other things. And Andy's latest project is on Discovery Channel. It's a very special one called Liberation Heroes. It's a Holocaust special you will not forget. And then the award-winning producer Linda Oakes will be joining us on next Friday, and she's the executive producer of the new National Geographic Channel miniseries, The Hot Zone, starring Julian Margulies, dramatizing the Ebola crisis. That's next Monday and Friday, April 29th, May 3rd, noon Eastern time on Monday, 4 to 5 p.m. next Friday, right here on Tomorrow will be televised. Now let's talk about Saran Jones' performance. Some people may know her from the series Dr. Foster, a very popular cult favorite here in the U.S. and also around the world. Her performance from start to finish is extraordinary.
Hello?
Yes, Sally, I'm here. I was just talking about Saran Jones. I wanted you to talk about her and how you got her to do this performance, because it is extraordinary.
Well,
and I have a hunch a lot of critics think that she's going to be a Best Actress miniseries nominee this year for the Emmys.
Oh, she's amazing. Saran is absolutely fantastic. I've known Saran for about 10 years. It's the fourth time we've worked together, although it's the first time I've worked with her with me directing. I couldn't for a long time imagine who could play Anne Lister because she's such a extraordinary character with so many facets, and because she was a real person too, and there are a number of portraits of her that are quite conflicting. I couldn't quite see anyone for long enough in my mind's eye, but Sir Anne came in and read, and she just really blew me away. She was so, I think what she has in common with Anne Lister, which is so striking, is her physical energy and her mental energy. She's just buzzing with ideas, and she came in with so many you know, suggestions, big bold ones and much more subtle nuanced ones as well. So I knew she was going to be she just had the right attitude as well. She has this very life-affirming positive attitude, which is Anne Lister all over. You know, Anne Lister had this really very practical but very optimistic view of humanity and the world. You know, she was never a victim. She refused to be a victim in any way, shape or form. And I think Sir Anne really grasped that so intensely from the word go. So, you know, it was a delightful rehearsal process. We rehearsed for quite a long time. We don't normally get a long rehearsal time in TV, but we asked if we could have much longer than you would normally have because we wanted to really work on this woman's mannerisms and her voice and the way she walked and all that kind of thing. And it was wonderful. It was a really creative process, and I think we both enjoyed it hugely.
Two other performances among a terrific supporting cast that you've got, Sally. One is Sophie Rundle, who plays will end up being the love of our main character's life. And secondly, if you remember way back when, in the 1980s, Masterpiece Theater on PBS, a series called The Duchess of Duke Street. The star of that series was a terrific actress named Gemma Jones, who played a similar character in many ways to what Sir Anne plays in this series, on your series. And here she is, decades later, playing a grandmother type, and I thought her scenes with Sir Anne were marvelous, and the rest of the cast were marvelous.
It's kind of a dream come true for me working with Gemma Jones because The Duchess of Duke Street was on when I was about 12 or 13, and it was, you know, it's still one of my top five favourite shows of all time. It really blew me away, so it was extraordinary, and to be able to work with her on a project like this was just delightful. And I agree, there are real similarities between the two characters. You know, she was a woman very much ahead of her time. She was very bold. She didn't see obstacles. You know, she was very good at looking above obstacles and moving forward. And there are a lot of similarities. I've thought that several times. I've never actually mentioned it to either of them. So it's Gemma Jones, Sophie Rundle as well. What a wonderful, wonderful, subtle actress. She's been an absolute delight to work with. And they have that fantastic chemistry on screen as well. I think we've been really lucky with that. It's palpable between them, the happiness that they found in each other's company.
Sally, two of the things, very striking things, about this program. One is the very you are there type of flavor in the cinematography and in the way that the scenes move, where a lot of times a scene will start or a scene will have a lot of shots where it's like you are there, you're there aboard the coach, you're there as she's and our hero is walking to the camera, walking behind the camera,
so the use
of steady cam kind of thing. The other thing is that in a lot of the episodes, Sir Anne does sort of a fourth wall-ish breaking kind of feel. Either it's with her body or her eyes, or in some cases with her voice. And in the first episode, it's not really fourth wall, but sort of close, where you hear her read part of her diary. Was that something Sir Anne came up with, or how did you come up with how did all of you come up with this idea of the camera technique and the idea of sort of the fourth wall breaking?
It all came from the diary, really. I thought long and hard about how to represent her as this woman who feels so ahead of her time in 1832. So I love the idea of following around with a steadicam, almost like we have to catch up with her because she's not going to hang around for us. We have to keep up with her. So I thought it was really important to capture her energy in that manner. Then the idea of speaking to the audience, again, that was an attempt to capture the real experience of reading the diaries. When you read Anne Lister's diaries, when you read the... I mean, I've been working off facsimiles most of the time, but I have been into the archives a number of times to look at the real thing, the real document. And when you read her handwriting and you know that she's touched that page, it's quite an emotional and intense and intimate experience. And her words, you know, you're reading her words direct, and so few people will have ever looked at that page. Only five people have ever read the whole journal, so you know that only five people possibly have ever seen that page before you did. And it's like she's talking straight to you. It's so intense, and the coded parts are almost like a stream of consciousness, outpouring of feelings and ideas. And I felt the only way to possibly capture that on camera is for her to literally turn and speak to the audience, and the audience to feel that they're having this private little moment with her. So I thought long and hard about whether to use it or not, because I know it can be overused. But we did talk about it a lot, and we did feel it worked and that it was appropriate. And I think we used it quite sparingly because we didn't want to use it cheaply. We didn't want to tell the audience things just as a shorthand for not dramatizing them. So we were very cautious about exactly how and when we used it. Some of them were improvised on the set, but most of them were written into the script before we started.
You're hearing Sally Rainwright. She is the creator, executive producer, co-writer, director of Gentleman Jackets, HBO's new series. You can find it Monday nights, 10 p.m. Pacific time, Chapter 2 coming up this coming Monday. Sally joins us live from London, England, this half hour on Tomorrow. We televised Simon Apple. I'm with you live from New York. Happy to have you with us on this Wednesday edition, special midweek edition of the program All About Television. Normally with you Monday and Friday at this very hour here on Blog Talk Radio and Spreaker. We're also on the iHeartRadio Podcast Network. Coming up, by the way, later this hour, our Classic Question of the Week. And we have two prizes in play, and one of them is a wonderful book about the series called Gentleman Jack, The Real Anne Lister by Ann Chanka. Sally wrote the foreword to it. Stand by. Next half hour, we're going to give you our question. And if you are first with the correct answer, you will get this book and another book as well. Two other things I wanted to get into before we leave you, Sally. One is the fact that you were able to produce this series on location, in the actual locations that Anne Lister lived in, worked in, and so forth. Was it like for you and everybody, kids in a candy shop, that you were able to get the permission to go to those roads in Halifax, those castles, those homes, and actually do the series there?
Well, Shipton Hall itself were very on side with us doing the filming there. They were very excited about it, so they were very positive, and they were very friendly, and it was really kind of them, though, to let us do it, because Shipton Hall was built in 1452, so it's an incredibly old building. It's a fascinating old building. It's a magical place. So for us to be allowed to film there and tell her story in the place where a lot of these scenes really happened was a really extraordinary experience, and I think it, in some subtle way, it has added to the quality of the show. I think every day we were there, I always had a moment where I thought, this is amazing that we're getting to do this. And several times Saran sort of paused and said, I can't believe I'm here being her, and this is where she lived and walked and ate her meals and wrote a diary and fell in love, and, you know, all the things that she did do. So it was a unique experience. I mean, the whole project is unique, you know, and that was a particularly emotional part of it, I think, being able to film in her own home. The house that we used for Anne Walker's home, Crownest, wasn't actually her real house, because Crownest no longer exists. It was demolished in the 1960s. So we used a house near York called Sutton Park, which was as close a resemblance to the original Crownest as we could find. But a number of other houses that we use in the series, like the house that the Mr. and Mrs. Priestley live in, is very much of that period. It was owned by the Rawson family, in fact, who are other characters in the drama. So it has a great sense of authenticity about it, which I hope adds to the visual quality of the piece.
Mm-hmm. It's amazing when you're able to shoot on location in those locations that have remained pristine for two centuries. It really is amazing. The other thing that also is striking is the music score by Murray Gold. which has, in one way, it's very folk music oriented. In the other way, it's very driving. It's very contemporary. You get a sense of, again, the You Are There kind of feel. How did you find this composer?
Well, I've worked with Murray several times over the years. He worked on Last Tango in Halifax. He worked on Scott and Bailey, which is another project Saran and I worked on together. And I love his music because, again, it comes back to Ann Lister. It's got a real life-affirming quality. It's very uplifting. It's very joyous. It's very celebratory. And for me, that was very apt for her. And again, he's very modern. Matt Murray, he's got a very modern feel. And again, it was me. For me, it was that trying to contrast the world of 1832 with this woman who was almost from another, you know, from another planet almost, and certainly mentally feels like she's from a different period in time altogether. So it really helps with finding that balance between representing an authentic feel of what it might have been like to live in 1832 with this woman who was, you know, such an extraordinary presence to everyone around her.
When you were here in New York, you had a number of things to say about going into a second season. Now you've had a little bit of time to think about it. If you get a second season from HBO and the BBC, it's a co-production, by the way, between both organizations, where would you like to take the series? Is there part of Ann Lister's exploits you didn't get a chance to cover in a full way or way you wanted to in this series that if you get a second chance, you can do it?
Absolutely. I mean, there's so many more places to go. I mean, I'd be so happy if we were lucky enough to get a second series. In that, you know, they did eventually live together at Shibden, and that's kind of when the fun starts. I mean, that's when they were challenged more about who they were and what they were doing. But Ann Lister, again, she was such an extraordinarily clever woman. She had a brilliant intellect, and she always managed to keep three steps ahead of everyone around her, and that's how she was able to navigate her way so skillfully through society and maintain her stature, and people kind of just couldn't knock her. People really couldn't pull her down. Anne Walker found it much more difficult psychologically, so it's a very touching story, but it's a story about she was so courageous. She was so determined to be who she was and not to compromise who she was and not to compromise her dignity either. She was such a rare human being and so uplifting. I mean, that's why I wanted to write this. For me personally, I wanted to show the world this woman who had this just this really healthy attitude towards her homosexuality at a time when, you know, even now people struggle with that. And I personally find it very uplifting, and I wanted to share that with other people because I think it's important.
Mm-hmm. And for sure, a very full and very, very rich life. Gentleman Jack, episode 2, next Monday, 10 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time on HBO. Check your local news for HBO is available in your area on cable and satellite. It's also available on HBO Go, HBO On Demand, and other platforms. And coming up later this year, it will be running on BBC One in England. For more details about the program online, you can go to HBO.com. And Gentleman Jack, episode 2, next Monday, 10 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time. Sally Rainwright, the creator, executive producer, co-writer, co-director of this series, congratulations on getting this off the ground. A very, very personal project for you. Congratulations to everybody involved. And I have a hunch, Sally, that before too long, when it comes time for Emmy Awards, your series and Saran's performance, for sure, may be in the thick of the hunt in the Best Miniseries category. It's been a pleasure to have you with us. Congratulations again.
Thank you very much. Nice to talk to you.
Same here, Sally. All the greatest. Continued success. Take care.
Thank you.
Sally Rainwright from Gentleman Jack on HBO, joining us live from London. More tomorrow we televised, coming away with first some words from our fine folks and friends at Audible.com. It's a very unique book that has just become an audiobook you can get right now at Audible.com. It's called America Before. Have you ever wondered what was America like before it was discovered by the folks from England and then made into 13 colonies? Well, Graham Hancock has come up with a very interesting tome about, well, what life might be like, depending on DNA and other advanced scientific techniques. And America Before can be yours if you decide on a trial run with Audible.com. Remember, Audible.com is the leading provider of spoken and digital audio entertainment and information. Over 180,000 titles to choose from, including the growing catalog of Audible Originals. It's everything from original productions made especially for Audible.com, one-woman, one-man shows, Broadway, off-Broadway, and regional theater productions. And you can listen to any title from Audible on any device, including whatever you're hearing us on right now at Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, and iHeartRadio. What you got to do is sign up at audibletrial.com/televised, get 3 free audiobooks, 2 of them Audible Originals, and it's all for 1 month listening to the service as you like. And you get great customer service, too, from the fine folks at Amazon.com, Audible's parent. So hear for yourself now why Audible.com will transform the way you hear the world. For that 1 month trial, 3 free audiobooks. Remember, it's audibletrial.com/televised. When we come back, we're going to continue here in New York, and joining us will be the Tony-winning co-star of The Book of Mormon, who is now enjoying life on television as the co-star of the Fox legal drama on Friday nights, Proven Innocent. Nikki James joins me after we come back, after we pause at the bottom of the hour for web identification. www.blogtalkradio.com and speaker.com. Together reaching over 35 million listeners around the world every month and growing. BTR is your home for the Human Lab. Check it out Sunday, 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific, a very unique Science on Radio show right here on Blog Talk Radio and Spreaker. And don't forget, best of BTR and Spreaker available 24/7 at YouTube.com. Welcome back to half hour number 2 of our 90-minute edition of Tomorrow We Televise, coming away on this Wednesday afternoon live on Blog Talk Radio and Spreaker, and also on the iHeartRadio Podcast Network. So I'm Applebaum with you. We're live from New York. 66 degrees at the top of the hour, and we have some more great guests coming away in this hour ahead. So stay with us and be part of the program. Participate. All you have to do is use our chat room, Simon Apple 04 by name. We have one person in the room already. You'll find it at blogtalkradio.com/televised. And you can also pick up the phone and dial in at 646-652-2906. Our next guest is one of the co-stars of the Fox legal drama on Friday nights, Proven Innocent. And some of you here in New York may know her as the Tony-winning co-star several years ago of The Book of Mormon. We welcome you to the program live here in the Big Apple, Nikki James. Hi, Nikki.
Hi, how are you?
Fine, thank you. So how have you been doing since you wrapped up filming Proven Innocent?
Oh, you know, we were shooting that show in very cold, very windy Chicago, Illinois. So I got back mid-February, and as you mentioned, I'm a theater actor and like of age. So I came back to New York, and I jumped right back on stage and did a show at City Center Encores, a production of a musical called I Married an Angel. And I've mostly been just enjoying the now-arrived spring with my new husband.
Congratulations, both the new husband and the show. I believe I Married an Angel was a musical back in the 1940s, I believe.
Yeah, I think it opened on Broadway in 1938. It's a Rodgers and Hart musical, and it's an old chestnut of a musical that we dusted some of the cobwebs off of and presented it to a modern audience. It was a really fun adventure.
So talk about Proven Innocent. There's still some episodes to go, and it's a run on Fox Friday nights. How did you get the role?
Well, you know, like all the actors, I'm just sort of poking around New York City, going on as many auditions as I can. And it was the end of what they call the pilot season, and I had had a few close calls, and someone reached out and said, you auditioned for the script a couple of weeks ago, and we had a different kind of performer in mind. Would you like to come back in and explore it? And it's the perfect role for me. I play a podcaster, and I'm on a podcast here with you, but I am personally a podcast addict. I'm an insomniac. So I spend most of my evenings listening to podcasts in the middle of the night with little AirPods in. And so I just felt like there was something about the show being about the criminal justice system. It's about seeking justice for people who've been wrongfully convicted. And to top it all off, I play a podcaster. Everything lined up for me. And I got the job on a Friday night. I flew to Chicago on a Saturday, and I started filming the pilot on a Monday morning at 5:30 a.m. So it was a bit of a whirlwind.
Well, since you opened the door, Nikki, what kind of podcast do you like?
Well, in addition to your podcast, which I'm now officially a fan of, I'm really, really into long-form journalism. So obviously I fell in love with podcasting with This American Life. I'm a big, big fan of Invisibilia and a lot of the stuff that's coming out of WNYC here in New York City. I love the show called 99% Invisible, which is basically about design. It's a podcast about incredible design and how design affects our lives without us even knowing. The list is long. I won't bore you, but I listen to almost everything.
It's also interesting that another show that started on TV this season about the past, God Friend and Me, also has a podcaster, as Brandon Michael Hall, as one of the key leads. We had Siraj, one of the other co-stars, on the program last fall, and I'm thrilled that the show, which is produced in New York, is now coming for a second season this fall on CBS. But it's interesting also that at the end of every episode, they have Brandon doing his podcast with, like, this wonderful thought he's come up with after his adventure.
Yeah, exactly. And it's kind of what we're doing over at Proven Innocent. My character, Violet, her podcast is about is run out of a law firm, and so I'm telling both our viewing audience and Violet's listening audience, we're sort of summing up the message of each of our episodes of our cases. It's a really cool conceit. I think it's a really interesting way to do storytelling and be clear about what it is that we're trying to say. And I think Violet is super brave.
You're hearing Nikki James. She is the co-star of the Tony-winning musical The Book of Mormon. Just came off a wonderful run with CBS Encore series, the Rise and Hearts tuner, I'm Not an Angel. And now you can see her Friday night at 9 p.m. Pacific time on the Fox Legal Drama Proven Innocent, also starring Kelsey Kramer in a very interesting cast. And was produced in Chicago, same place as a little thing called Empire. We'll talk about working with people behind Empire, who were on our show, by the way, Danny Strong and crew, earlier this year. Nikki joins me live here in New York this afternoon, Wednesday on Tomorrow Be Televised. Tom and Applebaum with you live from New York. Delighted you are with us for the program All About Television. Now it's 12th year on the air. By the way, we are going to be marking our 10th year on Blog Talk on Monday, May 6th, and we may have a very special guest for you. We're working on that right now. Anyway, if you have a question or comment for Nikki, don't be shy. Make the move and call us, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Nikki, tell us how your character started and evolved on Proven Innocent once you got on the show.
So I think that they were thinking that the podcaster, she was going to be this sort of the conscious of the show, and I was going to be presenting our cases and then also expanding it to talk about what the bigger message or what we can all take away from the plight of these individual people. As the show progressed, you see that Violet gets also really involved in the investigation side with the lawyers and our investigators. So it was really amazing as we were shooting episode to episode, Violet was getting out into the field. She was doing a little bit of undercover work, getting involved in ways that lawyers can't in order to get information. And it was really cool to see Violet out of her office, away from the microphone, and getting her hands dirty. And over the course of the episode, the course of the season, you really find that she realizes that the podcast is secondary to the reason why she really wants to work for this law firm, which means she really thinks of herself as a warrior for justice, a person who was put on this earth and given this special gift in order to help to improve and change people's lives. And then also, I think I have a bit of a quirky sense of humor. I'm a little bit of a silly person. I come from the world of musical theater. I've been prone to burst into song at the drop of a dime, and I think they really started to write to that kind of character. Violet was a little bit sassy, a little bit sarcastic, and I even get to sing a few notes here and there over the course of the season.
How much research did you do into the legal system, as well as podcasting, before you took the role on?
So I did a lot of listening to true crime podcasts. There's a great podcast called Wrongful Conviction. I listened to that. I also ended up meeting a number of exonerees and a few lawyers who do this in real life, who've dedicated their actual lives to making sure that the justice system is trying to get it right. just as a bit of a checks and balance, because we're humans, right? Humans are fallible, and so we don't always get it right. There are people who are in jail for crimes that they didn't commit. And so I met with a lot of these people in person, and I did a tiny bit of research specifically about Illinois law as far as it relates to, because our show takes place out as far as it relates to wrongful conviction. But for the most part, I trusted our writers to be on their game, and I was just trying to be honest and tell the stories.
Mm-hmm. Kenny Strong, the executive producer of Proven Innocent, and of course Empire, was on our show when the series was starting on Fox. And one of the things he and his fellow executive producer constantly wanted this show to do was to really look at not just specific cases of people who really demanded to be proven innocent of their crimes, but also we wanted to tackle some social issues as well that we're not getting a lot of attention. And I'm curious if there was a particular episode or social issue that you did tackle that you were particularly moved by or you were inspired by or you were happy, yes, I'm happy that we took a stand, that we covered this issue.
Oh, my gosh. Every week I felt that way. I mean, it's one of the things I love most about this show is, of course, we are doing a network drama. And, you know, so we're giving you a little bit of sexiness and a little bit of intrigue and some mystery. But at the same time, we're not shying away from the fact that a lot of the people who are going to be victims of this kind of, you know, injustice are people who are, you know, who are poor, people who are in marginalized communities. But my favorite episode, and I think the one that struck up the most conversations among our cast and crew, was the episode that we did about a white supremacist who was wrongfully convicted of a mosque bombing and what it was like for this team of people who have dedicated their lives to, you know, to justice. What happens when you have to represent someone who doesn't like you, in my case, or who might not like you, or might not be, you know, what we would consider to be a good person, a worthy cause. You know, we were always representing these people who seemed like victims. And what is it like when the victim is also someone who's a victimizer? And on set, we had a lot of really serious and deep discussions about what that means. And they wrote that into the script as well. It was a case where Violet's character and one of the lead lawyers were on opposing sides as to whether or not we should take on this case. And Violet really goes through a bit of a crisis of consciousness when she has to say, if I believe in injustice, that means I believe in justice for all people, not just people I like or you know. I thought it was a really smart episode, and I was really proud of it. And of course, we also did an episode about a transgender woman who was in jail and had been wrongfully convicted of a crime, and she was being denied her medication, and which is why she came to us. And I loved working on the set those couple of weeks to see all these incredible transgender actors who were able to have their stories told on network television in a really respectful way. It opened my eyes. It really did.
Yeah. How does it open your eyes? And I'm curious, what do you think about the fact that we are now seeing people of color, people in the gay, lesbian, transgender community or bisexual community, and more recently we're now starting to see TV series that are featuring people who are disabled in one way or another. And we will be seeing more of that as time goes on.
I think that when, you know, I'll be totally frank. When I was growing up in the 80s or 90s and watching television and seeing theater, it didn't even occur to me that I wasn't seeing myself. I was so used to seeing white faces that it wasn't until the show started to be integrated that I realized that was something that I was missing. And what I felt when I was working with these trans actors is that I realized that I didn't even recognize that they weren't being represented because they were so invisible. And I loved when chatting with these people and saying, this episode is the first time I had an audition in the last 8 months. you know. And I just think, oh my goodness, when our eyes are focused someplace else, we're ignoring an entire portion of our community, of our viewing audience, and of our country and of our world. And I really am so proud that there are people out there who are saying, who isn't being representative, whose stories aren't being told, and let's go and find these people and let's include their stories. I just think it was really smart, and it's not preachy. And that's the other thing. It's not preachy. We're not doing this so that we can get a pat on the back. We're doing it because those are the kind of stories that we want to be telling. And these are the people whose stories we want to tell. And these are the actors and writers and performers that we want to be working with too. You know, with the more diversity, the more diverse we are, the better we are, 100%.
Proven Innocent was filmed in Chicago, which in the last decade has really become a major television production center.
Of
Empire, because of all the Dick Wolf shows, and more recently the Chai, Lena Waithe series, which is now in its second season. We had the new showrunner, Yana Davis Frank, on the program. And we talked to her about the fact that she really wanted to have as many Southside Chicago people involved on all sides of the camera. Contrast working in New York with working in Chicago, with all the activity around you.
How is it different?
How is it different? How is it similar?
Oh, well, I think that the one thing about how it's different is it's much colder. Let me tell you, I was not prepared. Here I am thinking I'm like a hardened New Yorker. I've been walking these streets in my winter coat, but I will tell you, about 3 weeks into the real Chicago winter, when it settled in, I realized I needed to get a much heavier coat. What I did find was Chicago is an incredible city. It is a beautiful city, and the people are great, but it is a lot less crowded in New York. It's a lot easier to find a place to sort of park your trucks and all that other kind of stuff. But the truth of the matter is, what I loved was there is such great talent in Chicago. Our guest stars and our co-stars, people who are coming in, who are doing Chicago, doing Chicago-based theater, or Chicago-based theater actor or film actors. There's so much talent. But to be honest, like, the level of professionalism is exactly the same. I missed a few things about New York. I missed being able to have a delicious bagel and an actual good piece of pizza. But otherwise, I had an incredible time getting to know the performers and the theatrical professionals out in Chicago. It was really great. We had the stages where we had our sets built, where it was on the west side of Chicago, in a place called CineSpace, and it was kind of amazing. It felt like Hollywood Midwest. So all three Dick Wolf shows, Chicago Fire, Chicago Med, Chicago PD, us, Proven Innocent, The Empire, and The Chi, we were all filming on the same lot. And it was really kind of like, it felt like we were in Paramount, you know, the new Paramount Studios in the middle of Chicago. You're walking to work and you're, you know, waving at Oliver Platt and running into your other friend who's on Chicago Med. It was really fun. It was really, really fun. We felt like little baby pioneers out there.
And you hinted a moment ago that the polar vortex, when that happened a few months ago, you and Kelsey Grammer and the rest of the cast, you were all in the thick of it.
We were in the thick of it. In fact, we actually halted production for a day. And I remember waking up and turning on my iPhone and checking the temperature, and it said negative 21 degrees with a wind chill of negative 50. And I thought, yeah, probably working outside today wouldn't have been a good idea. I think I get my Girl Scout Polar Vortex badge, and I'm going to wear that proudly. I survived.
Yeah, some of those scenes of Lake Michigan frozen to the core, not to mention a number of other, that wonderful canal that runs through part of Chicago with all those great buildings. It was amazing. It was like frozen zone.
It was really shocking. And, you know, not to say that New Yorkers are not kind, but I did find that my neighbors were checking in on each other, and Nobody was, I was living in an apartment building. Nobody left the building. People baked cookies in our little hospital, you know, in our hotel, in our, the lobby of our apartment building, because everyone was stuck inside all day. And it felt like a real camaraderie. I really felt like a Chicagoan for the day, for sure.
Proven Innocent, produced in Chicago. Next episode is this Friday night, 9:10 Pacific time on your local Fox station. We've got the co-star of the program, also the Tony winner from the wonderful Broadway musical still running, The Book of Mormon. Catch it when you come to the Big Apple, you know. By the way, a lot of great Broadway stuff happening this season. Nikki James is with us right here on this half hour on Tomorrow Tell. If you have a question or comment for her in our meeting moments with her, you can make that call, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04. And again, coming up shortly, our Classic Trivia Question of the Week. And one of our prizes this week is The New Gentleman Jack Book by Ann Chubba, followed by our first guest, Sally Wainwright. So stay tuned. Get your pens and pencils and minds ready, because you may win that and another prize, too, if you know the correct answer. Nikki, by the way, what was it like working with Kelsey? This actor just keeps on keeping on, whether it's comedy or drama. He never falters. He just keeps on getting better.
No, Kelsey is the consummate professional and a really nice and funny guy. We bonded a little bit because Kelsey has a history in the theater, and he had toured with Christopher Plummer doing a Shakespeare production early on in his career. And about 10 years ago, I worked with Christopher Plummer, and we shared some old war stories of stage acting. But Kelsey was a really great leader. I think that of anyone on our show, and of course we had other incredibly talented actors, Rochelle Lefebvre leading our cast, Russell Hornsby, Vincent Kartheiser, some of the best actors in the business, and every single one of them, you know, a true professional. But, you know, Kelsey has been around the block, and we were so lucky to have him. And I have to say, my husband is a big Frasier fan. Frasier is the show that I walk into my apartment at 10 o'clock at night after a long day, and my husband is watching an old episode of Frasier on Netflix, and I just think, oh, well, I was with Kelsey all day today, and now here I am with him again at home. He's so talented, and he's really giving and kind, and I feel really lucky to have been able to work with him this season, and I hope that we all get to come back to find out more about Gore Bellows next season.
Mm-hmm. By the way, you mentioned Russell Hornsby. I have been a big fan of him ever since we saw him and his on-camera wife, Nikki Michaud, in a wonderful series on ABC Family called Lincoln Heights, which was a groundbreaker, by the way, and that Kevin Hook was involved with. And I'm thrilled he had the wonderful role last year in that movie that got a lot of attention for him and made him a possible Oscar contender. So if you see Russell, give my best. I loved him in Lincoln Heights, and I just love his career. He makes great career choices, and he's a great actor.
He's a great actor, and he loves to sing. We would get in trouble a lot. We would shoot these scenes, the IDG team, we would call them we would have these scenes around our conference table. There's at least one of them in every episode, and we'd be shooting them, and Russell, Rochelle, Vincent, and I, we would start to get in trouble from our directors because we were constantly bursting into song. Russell has this this infinite memory where he can sing the words down with every song and also do many of Shakespearean speeches, the great Shakespearean speeches, like just on a dime. He's a lot of fun to have around, and I learned a lot from him, and I'm really proud to call him my friend, for sure. The first time I saw Russell on stage, he was doing a show with Viola Davis downstairs at the Roundabout Theater, a show called Intimate Apparel, and he struck me in that show so much that to this day I remember the name of his character. He played a character named George Armstrong. I was a little starstruck the first time I met Russell, I have to say, and from his film work, but also he is a monster on stage. He is just one of the most talented actors I've ever met.
To quote that wonderful movie, an actor for all seasons and all media,
yeah,
too.
Absolutely.
Film, TV, stage, absolutely. And by the way, along the way, your network went from being old Fox to now new Fox because of the Disney-Fox merger. So I was wondering, while everybody's waiting to see if you go to a second season, we'll know that, by the way, mid-May, aside from doing I Married an Angel, what are you up to next?
So I've got a honeymoon planned with my husband. we got married soon before, right, like 3 days before we started shooting in Chicago. He's a very patient man, and we're going to take a much-deserved break. I've been working really hard for the last couple of years, which is really lucky. As an actor, you know, there's this joke, if you want to hear an actor complain, you should give him a job, and I'm not complaining at all. And then I'm in the process of developing a number of a musical stage pieces that are in early stages of development that I hope to be able to continue to be involved in as they grow. I can't tell you what they're about or what they're called, but just know that the American theater is alive and well, and there's some exciting projects coming down the pipe. And besides that, I'm just like you said, we're kind of waiting and with bated breath to hear if we get a second season. And our audiences and our fans are so devoted. It's been amazing to communicate with them on Twitter and Instagram. So we know that our rabid Proven Innocent fans are out there and they're rooting for us.
Hmm. Before I let you go, any particular favorite new show that you're seeing or have seen? I understand Tootsie premiered. I don't know if it was on Broadway, but maybe been out of town. But the new musical version of Tootsie premiered, and I understand it got rave reviews, especially for the person who plays the Dustin Hoffman character.
Oh yeah, for Santino Fontana, who is an he is like a quadruple or a quintuple threat, because now he's learning how to do all the things, the singing, the dancing, and the acting in high heels. He's incredible. But there's so much good theater happening in New York right now. It's like the golden age of TV and the golden age of theater. I don't know how I have time to do anything other than, you know, watch incredible, talented writers and actors on stage. But in the last week, I saw What the Constitution Means to Me, which is basically a one-woman play, and it's one of the best pieces of writing I've seen in years. And then I got to see Glenda Jackson in King Lear not too long ago, and that is a performance that should not be missed. So I feel lucky to be a person in the arts when I get to watch these incredible, talented people do their thing and learn from them.
And right now you can catch Nikki James and Kelsey Grammer and Russell Horns and Red, the marvelous crew and talents as well behind the camera in action on Proven Innocent. It's the Fox legal drama, and you can catch the next episode this Friday, 9 p.m. East Pacific time on your local Fox station. And check the links to the Fox station in your area where it plays the program. For more details online, www.fox.com. That's www.fox.com. Proven Innocent will conclude its first season this May. Nikki James, co-star on Proven Innocent, Tony winner for the Book of Mormon. Thank you so much for coming on the program. We've been wanting to have you on for a while. Happy things finally worked out. You are a delight. Congratulations, you and everybody, on the first season. Hopefully many more seasons of Proven to come. And congratulations on your marriage. Have a sensational honeymoon. And let's have you back soon.
Absolutely. Nice chatting with you. Thanks so much.
Same here. And keep up the great podcasting, too.
I will. I should probably start my own podcast, shouldn't I?
Absolutely.
All right.
Take care. Nikki James from Proven Innocent joining me here in New York. Now time for our classic trivia question of the week. And if you first put the correct answer, you will win the new Gentleman Jack book based on the HBO series, The Real Time Lister from Ann Chunka, followed by our first guest today, Sally Rainwright. And you'll also get the brand new novel that was published yesterday, Delta 5, Asteroid Mining in Space, by the wonderful author Daniel Suarez. Some people call him the Michael Crichton of our time. Here's the question. Name the 1950s television series starring Boris Karloff as a London-based detective. Name the 1950s television series starring Boris Karloff as a London-based detective. If you know the answer, email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. It's simonapple04@yahoo.com. If you first get the correct answer, you will win the Gentleman Jack book and Delta 5 from Daniel Suarez as well, published by Random House. If you just missed the question, we'll try to repeat it before we leave you today, in the next half hour. And if not, we'll post it tomorrow morning on Facebook, and we also will post it on Twitter at UBC Simon TWT. That's UBC Simon TWT. Remember, in order to win, play in. And all the very best. When we come back, another HBO happening takes place next week. It involves a quartet of sketch comedy players all have something special in common and how they deal with it powerfully. The program is on tour with Asperger's R Us. Director Al Freeman joins me from Los Angeles after the pause at the top of the hour for web identification. This is www.blogtalkradio.com and speaker.com. Together, more than 35 million listeners around the world every month and growing. And BTR Speaker, your home for the B-side, a very musical adventure. Catch it today, 5:30 Eastern, 2:30 Pacific, today on Blog Talk Radio and Speaker. Don't forget, that's BTR 24/7 at YouTube.com. Welcome back to the Robbie Televised this Wednesday afternoon. Welcome to those of you just joining us at the top of the hour. Simon Avon with you right here in New York. 56 degrees at the top of the hour. Happy you're with us. Another great guest coming your way in a half hour ahead. And as always, we invite you to be part of the program. All you have to do is give us a call, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. Number of anywhere you catch us across the country or around the globe here on Blog Talk Radio and Speaker. Or you can check out our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. We already have one person in the room so far. That's SimonApple04 by name. And you can find it at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. It's very rare that we showcase two programs from the same network on a particular episode, and that's what we're doing today. We already showed you Gentleman Jack, presented that, which is on Monday night at 10 o'clock. Saturday NYC creator, executive producer, the overseer of that series was with us in our first half hour. But there's a program coming up next week that we thought so special, so unique, so interesting, that we had to get somebody from it on today's program. And that program is called On Tour with Asperger's R Us. It is about the tour of an interesting sketch comedy quartet that is unlike any quartet you will ever see. Why? Because all four of them are dealing in their lives with a very unusual autistic situation known as Asperger's syndrome. Joining us live from Los Angeles to talk about it is the director of this very unique program, Alex Lehman. Alex, thanks for coming on.
Hey, thanks for having me.
It is a pleasure. How did you meet up with this very unique comedy group?
Yeah, you know, I was actually doing a little research for a script I was writing at the time, and I came across some Asperger's comedy articles, and this was something a little different than everything else I found. And to be honest, I didn't know that much about Asperger's at the time, and I was really surprised to see that there was a comedy troupe with Asperger's, these guys that were on the autism spectrum. And to be completely honest, at the time, I just didn't realize that autism and having a sense of humor could go hand in hand. Clearly, having been through this documentary process now, I realize that these guys are brilliant and hilarious. And I decided I just wanted to make a documentary about them and forget about my script.
And you also had great support from two people who have done a lot with HBO, in particular, Mark and Jay Duplass, the sensational talent behind Room 104, which is one of the best late-night shows, actually one of the best unique anthology shows on television. Together, they did that before for a couple of years. They also involved with Animals, the adult and animation series that came out of the New York Television Festival about 4 or 5 years ago. In doing the research, how did these four sketch players all come together? And then realize, hey, we all have the same issue. Let's deal with it powerfully in a very humorous way.
Well, these guys all met at a performing arts camp for kids on the spectrum. One of them is a little older than the other three. Noah, he was actually a counselor there. And the three younger guys, Jack, Ethan, and New Michael, that's his name, New Michael. Don't call him Michael because he doesn't like that. They were all, you know, campers there, and they kind of found each other to be the funniest and most like-minded of that whole group, and they just kind of stuck together and kept doing their comedy. Just like any sketch group, you know, they just found the same things funny and had the work ethic to work it out.
Mm-hmm. Give us some examples of some of the comedy they do. How do they showcase what they deal with in their comedy?
I'm sorry, could you repeat that question?
Yes, how do they showcase what they deal with in their comedy? What kind of approach they take, no matter what audience they're facing?
Oh, what they deal with. You know what? They don't showcase what they deal with in their comedy. They maybe something that's really important to mention is they don't want to make their comedy about having Asperger's. And they don't make any comedy about autism or about being different. They just just like any sketch group, really, they just want to perform things that are funny to them. And I know it's a little bit ironic because their troupe name is Asperger's R Us, so there's a little bit of a catch-22 there. But that's what, you know, part of the doc series really explores, is that they're struggling with, you know, being an identity, you know, their identity being, you know, heroes to the community, while sometimes not wanting to be heroes for anyone and just wanting to be performers like anyone else.
Hmm. Yeah, it might be natural for some people to think, hey, you use comedy as this vehicle to showcase what you deal with. Because I remember a number of years ago, there was a wonderful talent named Jerry Jewell who had cerebral palsy. She was a stand-up comedian, and later became one of the co-stars of The Facts of Life, the long-running NBC comedy with the late Charlotte Ray heading the cast. And I did catch some tapes of her in performance at stand-up comedy clubs around the country, and she was, you know, letting it rip. Very, very funny, and not making no bones about the fact that this is who I am. Deal with me. I'm dealing with life, so you deal with me.
Yeah, Josh Blue is another guy who's a great comedian with cerebral palsy. There's definitely comics that choose to go in that direction, but these guys are more, you know, saying, if anything, they're saying, we really like puns, so deal with that.
So what is their subject matter? As you took your cameras with them on the road, what kind of topics do they cover in their comedy?
Well, you know, it's first of all, it's a tour doc. So, you know, when you put four guys that are in their, you know, mostly early 20s in a rundown early 80s RV, it smells terrible. And that RV, you know, is going to have trouble getting across the country, especially when you're putting, you know, 6,000 miles on it, not going the fast way across country. So it's, you know, some of it is just dealing with life on the road, which, again, I think any band or comedy troupe touring, you know, there's going to be some fun stuff that happens just being there and having full access to their lives. But then the guys do share, not in their stand-up comedy, but in the doc series, they do share aspects of their life and their sensitivities as autistics, and they explain how certain things are more difficult for them, and they show us ways that they cope with some of their, you know, challenges as autistics. But they're also constantly just making jokes on the fly, and you know, they're some of the fastest, you know, most witty people I've ever worked with. So some of the best comedy actually just happens, you know, in the verite, you know, in the just behind the scenes doc. Just following them around.
Asperger's R Us is a four-man comedy troupe, and they're consisting of Noah Britton, Kenton Finland, Jack Hankey, and, yes, new Michael Ingemi. That's right, or Ingemi, I-N-G-E-M-I. And they are the subjects of a very special HBO documentary miniseries called On Tour with Asperger's R Us that Alan Lehman directs. The series is consisting of 6 half-hour episodes, and they're going to be running on 3 consecutive nights next week. Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday at 8 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time, 2 half-hour episodes per program. And Alex is with us live from Los Angeles this half hour. On Tomorrow will be televised. Time to have on with you live from New York. Delighted to have you aboard. You have a question or comment for our guest? Make the phone ring, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. We have another episode coming your way on Friday at this very hour, 3 p.m. Eastern Pacific. And then next week, we'll be with you Monday and Friday, but at different times. On Monday, because of the digital content new fronts that are kick off here in New York, we're going to be with you 3 hours earlier, noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific. That's noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific. And one of our guests that day will be Andy Friendly. Yes, he is the son of one of the most brilliant people in the world of television journalism history, Fred Friendly, the man that worked with Edward R. Murrow on the classic CBS documentary See It Now and more. Andy's latest special is running on Discovery Channel, and it's a Holocaust special like no other called Liberation Heroes. And then a week from Friday, May 3rd, one of our guests will be the award-winning executive producer of the new National Geographic Channel miniseries, The Hot Zone, starring Julian Margulies in a dramatic exploration of the Ebola crisis. Linda Orff will be my very special lead guest. That's next Monday and Friday right here on Tomorrow We Televise. So tell us how this documentary unfolds. When did we first spot this group, and where do they go all over the country?
Well, we start with the group in Boston. That's where they're based, and they kind of give us a little background as to, you know, who they are, who they want to be, what their expectations of this tour is. We get to kind of see just a slice of their home life, and we get to see them RV shopping, which is pretty fun and pretty hilarious. There's definitely a couple people that tried to scam us with RVs that probably weren't going to make it out of the driveway. And then it, you know, we get a Boston show under our belt and get on the road. They did 18 cities on this tour. It was pretty phenomenal. They did shows at Airlines in New York, the Kennedy Center. They went all over the country and had some very different and very, very interesting audiences.
Define what you mean by interesting. How interesting were they?
Well, I think, you know, something we all learned is when you go across country and you go to different venues, you have very different kinds of audiences that have different kinds of expectations. And since the troupe is relatively new, they were learning a lot as far as the difference between a black box audience theater versus like a big, you know, Times Square comedy club audience and what their expectations are. So we kind of see the guys adjusting on the fly, trying to, you know, tailor their material for certain audiences. But because their comedy is so niche, it's absurd and it's pun-based, it's a lot of wordplay, there are certain audiences that responded really well and love them, and then there are a couple times that the shows didn't go quite as well. But the guys had fun with even those shows, so it was a blast to watch just how much they are born, you know, entertainers.
Mm-hmm. Being a sketch comedy troupe, do they do a lot of improvisation, or do they pretty much try to stick to their script, or whatever scripts they come up with, or sketches they come up with, they stick to them?
You know, they don't like improv, even though they're absolutely hilarious at it, and that's something that we'll always butt heads on. They love doing their sketches as is, except for there's one sketch that New Michael does that is pretty improv-based, and especially in episode 4 when the show kind of, you know, goes off the rails, you see New Michael really play with it. But for the most part, their improv is more stuff that we capture behind the scenes in the doc series, where they're, again, just being witty and really quick. But their shows themselves are more traditional sketch-based as rehearsed, which makes a lot of sense when you think about it, because typically people on the spectrum don't deal with change very well, and that's something that we cover also. Change is frightening and hard to adjust to, and so, you know, I guess sometimes it's best to stick to the script, which doesn't work when your RV blows up.
And that happened in the course of the series, that their RV got busted.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I don't want to give too much away, but it happens, you know, happens a couple of times. That's just what we call good television. Are you getting any questions from fans? Because otherwise, I can start asking you questions.
Well, before you do, I have two. And well, by the way, if you have a question, get in the chat room, Simon Apple 04 name, or give us that call, 646-652-2906. What kind of subject matter inspires them to come up with their sketches? Are they very topical news? Is it just getting along as friends? What inspires their comedy material? What do they see as like the main source?
Absurdity. They basically like anything that's absurd and it's going to make you scratch your head. When I read that article that you know informed me that there was this comedy troupe with Asperger's, I wasn't sure that I wanted to make a series about them, you know, make a documentary about them at the time, because at that point you're just making a feel-good puff piece. It was really important for me to know that they're actually funny. So the first sketch of theirs that I ever looked up, it was the only one they had on YouTube at the time, and it was about one of the guys telling the other one that he's pregnant, and the other guy admitting to the first guy that he's actually not a person, he's bubble wrap, which is absolutely absurd. And I'm not doing it justice because I'm the least funny member of the series for comedians, and you've got me on the radio. Sorry, but it was a really funny sketch, and it was weird, and it reminded me of like the Kids in the Hall and Monty Python, which I assume that all those people just basically think of the weirdest, silliest things that make each other giggle, and if they can't stop laughing, they figure out how to make that contagious for audiences.
Was there a conception you had about taking this on that got busted along the way once you got, you and your crew got to know this foursome? Or was there a particular incident that sort of, wow, I didn't expect this. This is not what I thought I was going to be in for.
Well, I'd say that that anytime you put a group of, you know, four performers on in a pretty small RV, and then you add on another four or five documentarians, and they're all riding together and living together. I'd say, again, probably the smell is what I expected, what I was most surprised by, followed by the smell. Yeah, it was all the smell.
A lot of smell in all places. Was there a place along the way on this tour that the audience was, like, the most accepting of what this group does?
They have a great fan base in Boston, so the tour kicks off really great. And then I don't want to give too much away. There were some really great accepting audiences, and then there were some that weren't. As Jack says in the documentary, it's almost as if they were literally entirely new people at every show.
So it's like chameleons in a way, depending on like where they're at and both in their lives, but also where they're at in terms of the audience they play or the city they're in.
No, you know what I'd say? I would say that they're not chameleons. Some audiences, you know, as much as they tried to adjust, some audiences just didn't like them and didn't get them, and it just wasn't for them. It's a very niche comedy troupe. They're very specific in saying, you know, if it's funny to us, we're going to do it. And if you don't get it, that's too bad. So they're, you know, I'd say actually they're, as much as like New Michael does some great improv and tries to like, you know, rally a couple of shows, these guys are the epitome of embracing who they are, really accepting themselves and understanding that not everybody's going to understand them, and that's okay. In fact, you know, in the very beginning of the doc series, they talk about how they hate being called heroic. They don't think that it's heroic what they're doing. You know, they compare themselves to any other comedian. Would you say any other comedian is a hero for getting up on stage and performing? And I think that's a very valid point, but I find it, you know, first of all, having stage fright and never wanting to be on camera or on a stage, I do find them heroic just for being performers. But I do really look up to them as well, because I think that unlike most people, you know, spectrum, not spectrum, just in general, I think most people are really kind of afraid to be themselves, afraid to be liked. And there's a fearlessness that these guys have where they've decided to really dig in their heels and say, I don't care if some people don't get me. I don't care if some people don't like me or don't like my sense of humor, because there are other people who are going to absolutely love who I am and what I do. And so I'm going to just be myself. And that's really important in the autism community as well, because there's, you know, there's a divide. There's, you know, there's a lot of, this is a minefield, so I'm going to be careful how I say it. But there are some people in the autism community that think it's very important to teach people with Asperger's or people, you know, on the autism spectrum to make eye contact, shake hands, do certain things that maybe don't come naturally to them or are even unpleasant to them. And to a certain extent, there needs to be that kind of assimilation for people to be able to, you know, hold a job or, you know, have a relationship. And so some of that is necessary, I guess. But you see it sometimes go too far in the autism community, or the expectation that people have of autistics, where, you know, you just want them to stop being quote unquote weird and start being like everyone else. And there's a lot of beauty in recognizing that these guys and plenty of people, whether they're autistic, ADD, OCD, whatever, don't have to completely try to transform or mute themselves because they are perceived a little weird by other people. All you really need to do is embrace yourself, find a way of life that works for you, and ideally find some people that really get you and that are maybe like you, so that you can feel, you know, more comfortable and stronger. And that's what this troop did.
Beautifully said, Alex. We're going to have a call. We're going to take a call in a moment. First, two things. First of all, Asperger's or Us are about to wrap up their latest comedy tour, which they've done in places like Kingston, New York, Pittsburgh, Richmond, Virginia, Philadelphia. And on April 29th, you can find them if you're in Greenfield, Massachusetts. For those of you up in New England way, that's where they will make their latest stop, Greenfield, Massachusetts. And if you like, we'll stay in touch with HBO and the folks making the series and see if we can find out more details about exactly when, where that performance we're going to be. And secondly, we want to let you know that I have a column that came out today about Apple and their TV plans. And what are the key takeaways of that Apple event in Silicon Valley over a month ago? And what should Apple do between now and the fall when they decide to put that event, that venture on the air, along with Apple Arcade? So read about that in www.mediavillage.com. That's where you can find my tomorrow be televised columns about the world of television, especially the world of advanced interactive TV. www.mediavillage.com. You can also check out wonderful work by the likes of E.B. Moss, Jack Myers, Ed Martin, Charlie Weiser, a whole group of people who have thought leadership about what's going on in the world of TV and media. That's available 24/7 on the web, www.mediavillage.com. Hello, you're on Tomorrow Be Televised. What's your name and where are you calling from?
Hey, Simon. It's Rick Webb calling from Philadelphia.
Rick, great to have you on, and you're on the phone with Alex Lehman. Go ahead.
Hey, Alex. Just a question, since you directed this, and like, just do you have any advice for other directors or producers on like what dealing with like people with autism or Asperger's in within the creative fields, like filming specifically?
Hey, Rick, thank you for the question. I'm from Philly, too, so you already got a little place in my heart. You know, I think that, I mean, I guess it really depends if you're making a documentary or something scripted or whatever, but I would say that it's really important to, first of all, you know, not surprise, you know, them with changes. Try to be communicative as much in advance as possible, really set expectations so that they get a good sense of, you know, what's going on and what's going to be expected of them in the day. And then, you know, just listen and check in and try to notice if they're seeming stressed or tired or overstimulated, and, you know, provide those extra moments and spaces of, you know, no stimulation and of calm that allows them to, you know, be a little more balanced and recharge. And honestly, as I'm saying that, like, I wish producers would do that for me as a director. I'm just realizing how wonderful does that sound for all of us to sometimes get a little moment of escape from stimulation and stress and everything. But then the only other thing I'd say, you know, and certainly in making a documentary, but just in general, I think just working with performers in general, I think it's really important to not force your vision and your ideas on them right away, but to first kind of like keep that sandbox open for them to explore and play and be themselves and see what's working and adapt to that, because, you know, it should be their vision as much as your vision. It should be their performance as much as what you want their performance to be. And together you guys can mold something that's probably more interesting than what you had in mind in the first place and will certainly be more genuine.
Cool, very cool. Well, I'm definitely looking forward to checking this out and continued success.
Thank you so much.
Absolutely. And thank you, Simon.
You're welcome, Rick. Have a great rest of your week down in Philly. Congratulations on your 76ers beating our Brooklyn Nets and moving on to the next round of the NBA playoffs.
Absolutely. Great game. Take care.
Absolutely. Take care, Rick. Great to have our friend from Philadelphia, and congratulations to the Brooklyn Nets on a wonderful season, and they'll be back, I have a hunch, this coming season that begins this fall. Alex, we have about 30 seconds left. What's next for you in terms of TV projects?
Well, I'm gonna I'm going to send Rick a letter and thank him for watching our series. That's probably what I'm going to do when I hang up this call. And then, you know, we've got a couple other, you know, docs and scripted things, nothing I can talk about yet, but hopefully something with the Asperger's or Us Boys, because they are hilarious.
They are marvelous, and thank you for, and Mark and Jay Duplass and the rest of your crew for really bringing this group to us, the American public, and I hope that a lot of good comes out of this showcase, which begins next Tuesday night on HBO, 8 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time. It's 2 episodes per night, and it's a 3-night episode, a 3-night event that continues to Thursday, May 2nd. Check your openings again for where HBO is available in the area on cable and satellite, and one more time, along with Gentleman Jack, for more details about this program as well, it's HBO.com. On tour with Asperger's R Us, directed by Al Freeman, starts Tuesday, April 30th, 8 p.m. Pacific Time on HBO. And once again, if you want to catch this group in person, April 29th, Greenfield, Massachusetts. And if you want to know more about that, again, check out HBO.com. I'm sure they will have the details. Our program director, thank you again for joining us. Congratulations to you, Mark, to everybody for making this event happen. And hopefully the best of luck to you on continued events. We'd love to have you back anytime.
Thank you so much for having me. Have a great day.
You too. And again, our very best to Noah, SN Jack, and New Michael for what they're doing, and continued success with them.
Absolutely. Watch the show, everybody. Thank you.
Will do. Take care. Alex Kinnaman, director of On Tour with Asperger's R Us, joining us live from Los Angeles. I want to thank all of our guests for being here today, these last 90 minutes, and all of you for tuning in. Don't forget, we're back on Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern Pacific. And coming up next Monday, special time, noon to 1 Eastern, 9 a.m. to 10 Pacific, one among our guests, Emmy Friendly, the executive producer of the new Discovery special, Liberation Heroes, a Holocaust special unlike any other. And a week from Friday, May 3rd, we're on from 4 to 5 Eastern, that's 1 to 2 Pacific. Linda Oakes, the award-winning executive producer of The Hot Zone, will be with us. That's the new Nat Geographic miniseries starring Jenna Margulies and dealing with, dramatically, the Ebola crisis. If you came in late on today's program and want to catch up on episodes you missed, go to our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. It's blogtalkradio.com/televised. Check out the podcast on iTunes, Apple TV, Spreaker's podcast app, and, of course, the iHeartRadio Podcast Network at iHeartRadio.com. And one more time, top trivia question of the week. Name the 1950s TV series starring Boris Karloff as a London-based detective. Email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. Don't forget to include your name and full mail address. If you have the first correct answer, you will win the Gentleman Jack book, as well as Delta 5 by Daniel Suarez. And don't forget, you can also use that email to be in communication with us, or find me on Facebook or follow me on Twitter at UBCSimonTWT. Remember, however you communicate, we do respond, because what you say matters. The views expressed in this program are those of the participants, thus with the Block Talk Radio speaker and iHeartRadio. Remember, Tomorrow We Televise is brought to you today by Audible.com and Amazon Company. Audible transforms the way you hear the world. For free to audio books and a 1-month trial, audibletrial.com/televise. But Tomorrow We Televise, I'm Simon Applebaum in New York. Thank you for listening. Have a great rest of your midweek and Thursday, too. Back less than 24 hours. Friday, actually 48 hours, excuse me, Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern Pacific, our regular time, you know where, Block Talk Radio speaker and the iHeartRadio Podcast Network at iHeartRadio.com. Whatever you're up to over the next 48, make sure that it's safe and you're playing it great. Until next time, stay well and stay tuned.